Well, the most amazing and instructive incident is recorded for us, and with good reason, in the Gospels, as we're going to see. Mark chapter 19, verse 17. This is not the only place this is. It's also in Matthew, but I want to read from Mark chapter 9, verse 17. The title of today's sermon, God, Faith, and Works. And we're going to try to put things in a certain perspective. And once again, as we go through this, hopefully we will begin to see more about this very, very important idea of what God requires of all of us, and that is faith. Mark 9:17. Then one of the crowd answered and said, "Teacher, I brought to you my son who has a mute spirit." Let me give the context of this. He was on the Mount of the Transfiguration. He comes down. He has only three of his disciples or apostles with him, Peter, James, and John. And he comes down, and there was this kerfuffle going on, and this is what it was about. Verse 18, "And wherever it seizes him, it throws him down, and he foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. So I spoke to your disciples that they should cast it out, but they could not." It's interesting that the father here said that he knew exactly what the problem was. Now let me say, some people might look upon this as some type of seizure, of course, and that's all it was, but it wasn't. It was more than that, because we read in the context exactly what took place, and that there was a lot more going on than this, even though we may have certain symptoms today. But this is not what it was. He answered him and said, "O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I bear with you? Bring him to me." So he's referring to who? Faithless generation. He doesn't say. In one sense, he may be referring to his own disciples, who themselves had been sent out to cast out demons. Now, it's not my whole purpose here to get into demonism and how it tended to affect people in that day, and today too, for that matter, because they're still around, and people's minds and lives are unfortunately so affected by evil spirits that do exist. Today, we tend not to believe in such things as that, but there are exactly as many today as there were 2,000 years ago. I don't know if you ever thought of that, but same amount, and they just have a lot more people to torment or to tempt or to afflict, as in this particular case here, taking advantage of a child. That's sad. But as I said, let's read on here in verse 20. "So they brought him to him, and when he saw him, immediately the spirit convulsed him, and he fell to the ground and wallowed, foaming at the mouth." Not a very nice picture here. People don't read this, or people don't want to read this, because he's saying some things that we have to confront. We have to take a good look at on several counts. One is the fact that we have such a thing that takes place in the world. So he asked his father, how long has this been happening to him? And he said, from childhood. And often he has thrown him both into the fire and into the water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us. You need to understand something here. This is not epilepsy. All right? Epilepsy, you can diagnose this. There are various causes for this. We have something more than that. Whatever this is, well, we know what it is. It is trying to destroy the life of the child. And this is a part of the distorted and twisted thinking of evil spirits, that somehow if they can be in the body that dies, when it dies, that somehow they will also die, and they will not have to face the terrible judgment that they will have to face. And they will. And it's not going. And they will be in an eternal judgment that is going to be a time of, or an eternity of torment for them. Now, so we have something here taking place which is more than simply a natural occurrence or sickness that one would normally see. Jesus said to him, "If you can believe, all things are possible to him who believes." So we have quite an extraordinary statement being made here. If you can believe. Immediately, the father of the child cried out and said with tears. This was quite a trial for them, as you would imagine. "Lord, I believe. Help my unbelief." Now, why does he say that here? First of all, Jesus puts this right back on his faith. And when he realized it was going to be a matter of his faith, so now he cries out and says with tears. He immediately declares that he does not have perfect belief in that Jesus could do this or even would do it. He admits this, which is fine. He is at least honest. But he said before, "I brought him to your disciples and they could not cast it out." Notice what he says here. It was all on the disciples then. Jesus takes it and puts it on him. What about your faith, my friend? Now, he's already had something to say about the faith of his disciples. That's one thing. Okay. Now he's talking to the father of the child, whose responsibility would be to actually have the faith. And the faith and the father, when now it comes on him, according to Jesus' clear words, then he's got to own up to the fact that, okay, I'm deficient in faith too. So he cries out. When he cries out in tears, he says, "Yes, I do believe. But Lord, you got to help my unbelief." So you see here, in this case, there are varying degrees of faith. Certainly with this man here. But Jesus always put it back on the person. I say always, most always. I can give you a number of examples. Let me just give them to you now. Matthew 9:2. And then it says, "Then behold," you don't have to turn to them, but I'm going to you write them down if you want. Matthew 9:2. "Then behold, they brought to him a paralytic lying on a bed. When Jesus saw their faith, he said to the paralytic, 'Son, be of good cheer, your sins are forgiven you.'" It takes faith to know that your sins are also forgiven. That's another aspect of it. But it also had to do with the fact that the paralytic was going to be healed. Matthew 9:20. This is all in the same chapter, by the way. And I could turn to other places to show you exactly what he said. "Suddenly a woman who had a flow of blood for 12 years came from behind and touched the hem of his garment. For she had said to herself, 'If only I may touch his garment, I shall be made well.' And Jesus turned around when he saw her. He said, 'Be of good cheer, daughter. Your faith,'" notice what he says here, "'your faith has made you well.' And the woman was made well from that hour." All right. Verse 28. "Then he had come to the house, and when he had come to the house, the blind men came to him, and Jesus said to him, 'Do you believe that I am able to do this?' And they said to him, 'Yes, Lord.' Then he touched their eyes, saying, 'According to your faith, let it be to you.'" Here are three places. He refers to their faith, as he did with the father of this particular child in the 9th chapter of Mark. And there are other places, too, I could show you, where he says something very similar. Okay, according to your faith, it's going to require the person's faith. Now, let's go back to Mark chapter 9, verse 25. When Jesus saw that the people came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, "Deaf and dumb spirit, I command you, come out of him and enter him no more." He was not going to make this something ostentatious, that is a show, something that he just simply wanted done without everybody seeing it. Now that's very interesting, isn't it? Verse 26, then the spirit cried out, convulsed him greatly, and came out of him, and he became as one dead, so that many said, "He is dead." It tells you what it is. But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he rose. And when he had come into the house, his disciples asked him privately, "Why could we not cast it out?" How come we couldn't do it? Which was the natural question to ask. So he said to them, "This kind can come out by nothing but prayer and fasting." So what would Christ possibly mean by that? It's a statement that requires a better understanding. I want to go to Matthew chapter 17, verse 19. When the same account, and Jesus adds something to it that Matthew wants to insert here. Remember, Matthew was there. Matthew 17, 19. Then the disciples came to Jesus privately and said, "Why could we not cast it out?" And so Jesus said to him, "Because of your unbelief." Now this is what he says, "Because of your unbelief." And then he adds this, "For assuredly, I say to you, if you have faith as a mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, 'Move from here to there,' and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you." He said earlier to the Father, "All things are possible to him who believes." Now, what this child had seems impossible. You know, that's the way it is a lot of times, isn't it? We simply see some people are in impossible situations. At least they think so. You know, that's what everything tells you. The world tells you. Somebody says, "You got the fourth stage of cancer." Death sentence. That's what it means to them. What does it mean to God? Well, you don't know. We say, "Well, that's the way it's going to be. Nothing I can do about it." You've resigned yourself to it. No, you don't know that. You don't know anything when it comes to God. All things are possible to him who believes, Jesus declares. Then he goes on and say, "I say to you, if you have faith as a mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, 'Move from here to there,' and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you." These are rather strange statements, aren't they? Because nothing like this has ever happened. He says something very similar that we'll read a little bit later on. But he's making these kinds of statements about nothing is impossible and all things are possible to him who believes. Let me put it this way. If you are going to proceed any further than the natural, than the ordinary, the usual, beyond your limited and controlled life, if I can put it that way, everything that happens to you, then being resigned to the effect of the forces in existence, if you're going to go further or beyond that, you're going to have to live by faith. My question is, how do you live? Let me say this again. If you're going to proceed any further than the natural, any further than the ordinary or the usual, limited and controlled in your life, everything that happens, and resigned to the effect of forces naturally in existence, if you're going to go beyond that, if you're going to go further than that, you're going to have to live by faith. That's it. This is the frame in which he puts all of this. This is the basis or the footing now in which he puts our life. If you're going to go beyond everything that is ordinary and natural, that happened to you, that happens to everybody else, simply that's the way it is, nothing you can do about it, then that's where you're going to be. You'll go no further. It's going to require belief. It's going to require faith. And so he talks a great deal about it. Faith is about what happens in the future. Belief is about the future. The word unbelief that he refers to, because of your unbelief, he said, the Greek word is apisteo. Belief is take the A off. It's the opposite. That's what the A means in Greek sometimes. Pisteo is belief. Same basic word for faith. Same word for belief. The verb form to believe, and the contrary then unbelief or faithful or faithlessness. All the same basic idea. 156 times in the Gospel in Acts, 380 times in the New Testament. Haven't even touched the Old Testament yet, but it's all through the Bible. God says, the just shall live by faith. Four times. Quoted first in the Old Testament and then repeated. You are saved through faith, we're told. In Hebrews 11:6, without faith it is impossible to please him. Without faith. Let me say this again in a different way. Without faith, you will be subject to the natural forces of this world. You will be subject to a system that has been set up from the beginning to keep you in your place and in subjection to it and everything that goes with it. You do not proceed to live under the care and blessings of one who intervenes in the natural world and makes changes. Without faith, nothing is going to happen. This is what he's saying. It's going to require faith. In the case of the family, with the child possessed by one of the unseen rulers of the world, he was subject to it. Nothing was going to happen. Another power had to step in and intervene to deal with the matter. His own disciples then, being influenced, living in the world, so influenced by what was around them, said in their own thinking, well, that's where the bone pointed. You understand it? What I mean by that? The witch doctor points the bone and the guy dies, whether he's sick or not. This is what happens. You see, it's what is expected. It's what is in a person's mind. It's what we have come to live with. Just like 4-stage cancer. This is it. The bone's been pointed. That's where you're at. So what are you going to do? You're not going to get out of this without faith. So we are subject then to the natural world. We're subject to the forces of this world. We're subject to a system that was started at the beginning, and we don't get out of that system. We're in it. Unless something more powerful, supernatural, steps in and makes those changes. The minute we were born, we became subject to the powers that be. Nothing happens unless natural law and the spiritual forces permit it. The system was set up long ago. There are bars on the windows of your soul from which we look out, wondering what is beyond. We are like this. And when faith has come, it's like Someone came along with a big truck, wrapped the cable around the bars, tore them out, and you're left standing, looking at the possibilities beyond your confined soul. I'm going to express it this way to help you to understand what is taking place. Everybody's imprisoned. They just don't know it yet. I remember we had this booklet called The Captivity of the World, or the Humanity in Captive, and had this bars. And that's exactly where we are. We don't go any further. We're held captive by it. And there's something a whole lot more out here that we have to come to believe in, we have to come to know about, and have faith in if we're going to get out of this. Do you have faith? Do you live by faith? Do you even know what it is? Is it a part of your thinking? This world here is designed for you not to have faith. As in the account of the father of the child who said, "Lord, I believe, help my unbelief," shows there are various states or levels of belief in faith. Oh, yes, indeed, there are. And we might ask the question, well, where are we in all of this? It bears some examination. So let's take this. Let's see if we can take a look at this and see where we're at. What we do tells the story of our faith. What we do tells the story of our faith. You are not bound by ceiling and walls set around you by the God of this world. That's not the situation you're in. You've been freed from that. You've been freed from that. But there was still a problem here. Luke 17, verse 5. Luke 17, verse 5. The disciples said this. They made the request to Jesus. It seemed to be very direct in what they said, which is not wrong. Matter of fact, that's preferable, to kind of beating around the subject a little bit. You want to be direct in what you say. They said, "Lord, increase our faith." Now, they had come to a conclusion. The apostles obviously saw what Jesus was doing. They saw how he lived. They saw how he was not conforming to the expectations of this world. He refused to do that. He refused to say, "I'm subject to all of this and I can't go any further." He refused to say this. And they saw that Christ lived and moved in a different realm. He had a certain view of the world and was living and moving in such a way that showed that he was subject to yet a higher power, something beyond natural law, something beyond. Now, the evil spirit world that controls and rules this world, and the ideas, the mores, the concepts, the principles by which this world is governed. He was beyond that. He refused to accept that. And they saw him move and operate in this world in such a way that they knew was so far beyond them and what they would do. So they said, "Lord, increase our faith." Now, why did he give them the example, as you go on, of the unprofitable servant? Now, it's very interesting. He doesn't say, "Okay, from now on you have faith." That's not the answer. He goes on to give another answer. Here's the answer, verse 6. Luke 17, verse 6. "So the Lord said, if you have faith as a mustard seed, you can say to this mulberry tree, 'Be pulled up by the roots and be planted in the sea.'" In other words, throw it into the sea. "And it would obey you." Now, this is quite out of the ordinary, isn't it? But this is the example he uses. "And which of you..." Now he goes on. This is very interesting. Verse 7. "And which of you, having a servant plowing or tending sheep, will say to him when he has come in from the field, 'Come at once and sit down to eat? But will he not rather say to him, prepare something for my supper, and gird yourself and serve me until I have eaten and drunk, and afterward you will eat and drink? Well, obviously this person was not a union member. Okay. He was fully the servant of his master in every way. Does he thank that servant because he did the things which were commanded of him? I think not. So likewise you, when you have done all those things which you are commanded, say, we are unprofitable servants. We have done what was our duty to do. Now he's starting to move beyond what the world would expect. He said, say we are unprofitable servants. And he draws something from the way men do things with masters and servants. Now, could it mean that the unprofitable servant who had the one talent, remember we covered that last week, the one talent person, the unprofitable servant who had the talent or whatever it is that God gives to a person, and he goes no further. Faith is beyond duty. Faith is what is beyond the normally expected. So Jesus uses the idea of faith as a grain of mustard seed, saying to this tree, he was obviously standing near a tree or under it, be pulled up by the roots and planted in the sea, and it should obey you. So he's giving an example in such a way that you are not confined to the ordinary and usual forces that govern and direct this world. You're not subject to this. That's what he's saying. So if you believe, then, that things are going to change, I think you need to identify what it is that needs changing in your life, or you stay where you are, and you're going to have to believe in that. Now, if you don't, I will tell you something. You're not going to do anything. So this brings us to the next point, James 2:14. Let's notice where we have the famous passage that we should cover here, faith without works. James 2:14, faith without works. You know, it's always put upon us that you're not saved by works. You're saved by faith. This is true. But you have to understand in what sense we're talking about. So he explains it here. James 2:14. What does it profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can faith save him? If a brother or a sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to him, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needful for the body, what does it profit? He says. Thus also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. Oh, so you're going to be doing something. Something is going to happen, but it's going to require faith. Verse 19, you believe that there is one God, you do well. Even the demons believe and tremble. But do you want to know, O foolish man, that faith without works is dead? Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered Isaac his son on the altar? In other words, he had to carry through with it as if that's what he was supposed to do. God told him to. Now, you're either going to do what God says, or you don't. Now, Abraham had to decide this. Now, Abraham also had to proceed in faith that whatever God told him to do was somehow going to work out. And, of course, it did. God saved him right at the last moment, but Abraham didn't quite know that. Faith. Faith has to come in here. Do you see, verse 22, that faith was working together with his works, and that by works faith was made perfect? If Abraham said, well, you know, look, Lord, I have faith in you up until this point, but this is a bit much. Okay, would you say he had faith? Well, yeah, he had faith up to a certain point. Just like the person said, Lord, I believe, but help my unbelief. He would still, it had not been perfected. It had not come to the point where he was willing to go the whole way with God. And the scripture was fulfilled, verse 23, which says, Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness. And he was called the friend of God. So, it says he believed God, but it was borne out in what he did. We'll read about Abraham in just a moment in the next few verses that we want to cover. You see then that a man is justified by works and not by faith only. Likewise, was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out another way? For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also. You know, whatever you do, if you're going to step beyond where you are right now, it's going to require faith. In other words, you're going to have to somehow believe that, number one, either you can do it, that's faith in yourself, which will get you a little ways. I'm not saying you can't do that. You need to have some confidence in your own capability. Yes, you do. Okay, how far is that going to get you? Well, as far as maybe one of the next obstacles or a great obstacle that comes along. Now, what Jesus is talking about here, he's talking about a great obstacle that needs to be removed. And one of the greatest obstacles are the voices that tell you you'll never be anything. You got to stay exactly where you are. And if you're going to be a good little boy or girl and get patted on the head, fine. You're exactly where you're at. Fine, nothing will happen to you. Which is not true. See, the world wants to keep us in a certain place. But a person, if you're going to move beyond that, you're going to have to do something. And if you do something, that at least shows some degree of belief and faith. Now, where this is all pointing, of course, is the fact that we ought to have that belief and that faith in God, that you're going to go on and fulfill completely his purpose and his reason for you being called and for you to become the person, the effective person in this world for yourself, for your family, for others. That's going to require faith. Faith must result in something. You must have an outcome. There has to be a result. It leads to something. It is about the future. Now, Hebrews 11, verse 1. Let's go there. Can't give a sermon about faith without the 11th chapter of Hebrews. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Okay, it is the substance of things. Oh, it's not yet, but there is evidence, and that has to do with your personal belief. Your belief in God, your belief in what is also already a basis for your life up until this point, there's a certain belief. People don't even believe in God. I think I've said this, but let me say it again, that you can achieve a certain amount based upon your own personal belief, if that belief is correct. But if you don't believe that you can do it, if you have certain very bad or toxic ideas or thoughts in your mind, you're not going to go any further. This happens. Now, I hope I'm not getting too complicated for you, because we're going to come to something here. And I want you to keep in mind the idea that faith has to take you beyond, far beyond what you're capable of doing. And this is the way he described it, because you're going to come into situations then where it's going to be essential that you'll have to have it. You can go along fine right now. This world may be quite happy with you the way you are. But then it will betray you. Stage 4. It's got you. Oh, I wasn't counting on this. Then where do you go? Well, you'll probably go to the places where they offer some type of help, but no guarantees. Now, there's another place you can go too. But if you're not capable, if you're not used to doing this, if you haven't moved on into the works side of it to demonstrate your faith, when the crunch comes, it's going to be kind of hard. I want you to think about it. Okay? Are you prepared for it? Do you have faith? The man said to Jesus, "Lord, I believe, but help my unbelief." Now there was a problem. Okay. Fortunately, he was helped in his belief, and he was talking to the right person. And it was recorded for us. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. There is some evidence. Now, it's hard evidence. In your mind, it's got to be evidence. You know what's going to happen. You know the outcome. You know the result. You have to have a belief in that. Verse 2, "For by it the elders obtained a good testimony." So other people lived this way before you. Verse 3, "By faith we understand the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that the things which are seen were not made of things which are visible." Now, it does not say here that by faith you believe that God exists. That's not what it says. People will assume it says this, or it means this. Do you have faith God exists? I don't think you have to. There's plenty of evidence. Hard evidence that God exists. Do you exist? Now, the existentialist would say, "Well, I'm not sure if I do." Okay, you run across a problem because you can't reason with a person like that. All right, but here it is. You exist. How did you get here? How did it come about? From nothing. Somebody had to put you here. There you are. All right, this doesn't take long to reason and to find out that God exists. And you can go a lot further than that as far as that's concerned. That we have a world that is in existence because it was created by God. All right. So it doesn't say that by faith you believe that God exists. You already have evidence of that. And there are those critics who accuse those who believe in the existence of God as accepting it by faith. And that is not true. They always say, "Well, you believe that God exists in faith." This is, no, that's not true. That's not what faith is about. I got plenty of evidence for that. I don't need faith in that. Okay, so everybody understand where I'm coming from on this one? Okay, so what's left? Faith. Faith is for those who already know God exists because the evidence demands it. Faith is needed for the person who knows this and to take God up on what he says. That's what you got to have faith for. Now, so are you going to believe God? Now, this is what faith has to do with. Mark 11, verse 22. Let's read this passage here before we proceed on in Hebrews chapter 6, which we're going to come back to. Mark 11, 22. "So Jesus answered and said to them, 'Have faith in God.'" Very simple. Okay. Have faith in God. We're assuming God already exists. So, okay, once you know that, have faith in God. "For assuredly I say to you, whoever says to this mountain," oh, there he goes again, making this outrageous statement. "Whoever says to this mountain, be removed and cast into the sea, and does not doubt in his heart, but believes that those things he says will be done. He will have whatever he says. He will have whatever he says. What's he telling? What's he talking about here? He's talking about a way of life here. He's not talking about moving mountains. And figuratively speaking, we might have to move mountains, if you understand how I mean that. But literally, you don't have to. A mountain's a mountain. It's there. Tree is tree. It's there. There's no need to do that. He's simply using an example where it's impossible. Something that's impossible. Here's why the language is used in the way it is, to help us to understand that. But what he says is this: this is an approach to life. This is how one should understand the future. It's how you should understand your future and begin to live in such a way where your works show that you have faith. Okay? You got to go beyond where you're at now. Sometimes, let me just say almost always, it requires stepping out. You heard that, Frank? The term? Stepping out in faith. All right? What do you know? You got to know. Okay? You've got to believe that. Have faith in God. Very simple statement. Very clear. Short. Have faith in God. Therefore, I say to you, what things you ask when you pray, believe that you should receive them, and you will have them. Once again, how many of us believe this? Where are we at with this particular statement here? Whenever you stand praying, he goes on, he doesn't finish here. Whenever you stand praying, if you have anything against anyone, forgive him, that your Father in heaven may also forgive your trespasses. But if you do not forgive, neither will your Father in heaven give you your trespasses. You see, you can't have this kind of a thing in your way. That's a block. This is a block. All right. You know why? Why is this a block? Okay, you got something before God. This is but belief in the future. With an attitude to where you truly believe God and you are trusting in him, you have placed matters and things into your hand, in God's hands, then is a way of life. Here's what he's talking about here. A way of life. It's not a matter of simply waiting till I get to stage 4 and then say, oh, well, I sure need faith, don't I? This is a way of life. That's what he's saying here. But this will stop you cold. If you cannot do what God says, okay, there have been wrongs done to me. People have trespassed against me. You either put them in God's hands and you deal with them. Or what's that old song, Aretha Franklin? Get over it or something like that. If you can't do that, you got a block. Okay, it's there. You know, you're going no further. It's the opposite of faith. So you can't have this in your way. You have to get rid of whatever feelings you have towards someone and put them into God's hands in faith for him to deal with it. Didn't say things won't be dealt with. Things are always dealt with. The difference is whether you're going to do it or whether God's going to do it or whether you want to get the satisfaction to do it yourself. Sometimes that's the case. Now, this seems to have sparked the request by the apostles when they said, increase our faith, Lord. And when he talked about forgiving your brother 70 times 7, so Christ is saying this, and they heard this, and they said, wow, Lord, could you increase our faith? I got a problem with this. I don't know if I can live this way. Faith is a way of life. Excuse me. It's a way of life, which means that forgiveness then and getting this kind of thing out of your system. If you can't get over it, it will be one of those things that will keep you in your prison. You're locked up. You can't go anywhere. And that's where you're at. The Son will make you free. You are free indeed, he said. Yes or no? We with this? Okay. It's a block. Let's go back to Hebrews chapter 11, verse 4. Chapter 11, verse 4. By faith, Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and through it, being dead, still speaks. God says, yeah, okay, it didn't work out too good for Abel. He permitted certain things to happen for Abel to be killed, but yet God testified about Abel. He was a person of faith. Verse 5. By faith, Enoch was taken away so that he did not see death and was not found. More is the way it should be understood, because God had taken him. For before he was taken, he had this testimony that he pleased God. You see, in a world where everybody else is growing corrupt, Enoch says, oh, I'm not going to go along with this. I'm going to believe God. And God says, okay, I'm not going to leave you here to be persecuted and subject to somebody killing you. I'm not going to do this. So he took him out of there. He died some other way, through probably natural causes. Or he saw death, but not in the way that a lot of people wanted to do to him, because he was a preacher of righteousness. We know that, same as Noah was. Verse 6, without faith it is impossible to please God, for he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. You know, you cannot begin to seek God except it is by faith. How much do you seek God? Okay. It's hard to seek God. You know why? We're going to cover this next time, by the way. And we're going to talk about seeking God and seeking God in prayer, and how it is hard to pray any kind of a prayer because it's going to require belief. Sure it does. And we don't want to be put in a position to where we're going to be disappointed, do we? So we don't ask. I don't want to give the sermon away. But that's what we do sometimes. Okay, it's a life. This is the whole way of life here that we're talking about. By faith, Noah, being divinely warned of things not seen, not yet seen. Okay, they were going to see it, but hadn't yet seen it. Moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of righteousness, which is according to faith. Did it take faith for Noah to build an ark? Sure, absolutely it did. What do you see? I don't see any water around here. He builds an ark. You see, this is beyond the call of duty, isn't it? This is beyond the ordinary. This is beyond what the world expects. This is beyond even just rudimentary obedience to God. This is beyond that. This is going beyond that. By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. Is this beyond that? He said, yeah. He said, get up and get out of here. And you go to the place where I want you to go. And you will become a father of many nations. And I will bless your children. And through all nations shall... or your seed shall bless all nations. In other words, is what he's saying. Now, you either believe that or you didn't. It required something to do. He had to get up and do that. It takes faith to keep the commandments of God. Let's make this clear. People claim the observance of God's law is not necessary for salvation. You are saved by grace through faith, and they quote that. Look, everything is by grace, but I'm going to tell you something. It takes faith to keep the law of God in a world that tells you that you can't do it and it will not work. It takes faith to do that. You're not going to live in this world without faith. The world reasons you can't tithe. That's what the world will tell you. Anybody will tell you that. You can't do that. Does it take faith to tithe your income? Yes, it does. Does it take faith to observe the Sabbath of God? Yes, it does. Does it take faith to observe the feasts and the holy days of God? Absolutely, it does. Did it take faith for Noah to build an ark? Yes. Did it take faith for Abraham to leave his people and his country and get out, never go back there again? Faith is going over and beyond what is normally expected. So you are threatened if you decide to observe the Sabbath. Once you do, you have entered into a place of the unseen. The future is about to unfold. You don't necessarily have to know how it's going to unfold, but you know it's going to in a way, in a manner, which obedience to God and faith in God is going to work out. This is what faith is all about. It will happen to you. You will not have to manufacture situations to prove your faith. It will all happen to you personally. Some people refuse medical attention, unless you misunderstood anything I've said up until now. Some people refuse medical attention or treatment because they feel they have to trust in God. Let's make the point here. There are a lot of things people do or can do for you. But you should also understand there's a lot of things they can't do. So what happens when you have done all you can do? Remember, it took faith to go over and beyond your duty. Works. Now faith comes in here. Faith is when you get into that realm now, in the ultimate sense, in the way God meant it for the man who said, "Lord, help my unbelief." It comes to the place, you come to the place where you can do nothing for yourself. We've alluded to that already. But this is where God has to do it. Do you have faith then in this? All of these people in Hebrews chapter 11, all of them, okay, were placed in situations where events were beyond their control or their capability. It was absolutely beyond that. All right. So you see where we're taking this. Faith in the first instance is your efforts according to your ability, you stepping out in faith, demonstrating your faith by your works. That is within your duty to do so and beyond that duty. It takes some faith to do that. Okay. But then, faith is when it is everything is out of your control. God has to step in and make it possible. This is what Jesus was saying when he said, "Now look, all things are possible." Now that's the point we have to come to. But if you never exercise any faith at all by doing nothing, not being inspired by the future, taking steps to make it happen, then you certainly will not have the faith for God to intervene when things are out of your control. That won't happen either. Okay. I hope I haven't lost you. But we had to come to this point in the sermon. It's not faith or works. It's faith and works. So when we find ourselves in a situation where you can do nothing of yourself, then it is a matter of faith. Now, I've got an announcement to make. We are all in that situation now. Okay. All right. Here's the point we must come to. In the message, and the point you must understand in your own life. We can do nothing of ourselves. So your life then must take on a life of faith. Nothing less than that. Let's read John 5, verse 30. Let's understand how Jesus understood this. John 5, 30. He said this. I can do nothing of myself. And once again, quite extraordinary. To be contrasted with the statement, if you believe, all things are possible. All right. These are not great contradictions. He's trying to make the point, of course. I can of myself do nothing. As I hear, I judge. My judgment is righteous because I do not seek my own will, but the will of the Father who sent me. Is this a life of faith? From start to finish, it was a life of faith. From the minute he stepped into this world, it had to be a life of faith. He was not going to be subject to this world. He was not going to be limited by this world. He was going to do the works of the Father. And he even told his disciples, his apostles, he says, the works I do, you'll do better than that. You'll do greater works because I go to my Father, he said. So this, what he says here, best sums up a life of faith. It's what he had from the very beginning. Now, the man in the story wasn't there yet. Are we? You may not know until that time happens. But you know, we need to start thinking about it. Faith is something that is hardly ever thought about. Are we living by it? Do we live a life of faith? Do the just live by faith? Or are we simply going along with events, going along with the world, going along with what is expected? Or are we then subject to that which is unseen, a greater power, a higher power? And that's the tune to which we march. And here's the one to whom we follow and we obey and we believe.